Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the lethal weapon.
Yes.
I believe it.
You've got the ponytail man bun thing going, you know, with the hat and stuff like that. So you could pull it off, you know. Calm, cool, collective, and then all of a sudden lethal.
Yes, sir.
You know, and you're Asian, so you've got to have ninja skills.
And then I'm going to shave my hair finally. I'm going to cut my hair off this week.
You're long lost.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, man.
Well, no.
You're long lost.
Actually, I'll get my vaccine first, then I'll shave it.
Your long lost twin is in this movie.
What? Oh, yeah.
That we're doing today.
And he has a speaking role.
Yes.
I didn't realize I've never ever seen that guy talk in any movie I've seen him in. And this is the first movie I've ever seen him talk. Good English, too.
But,
yes.
Yeah.
So you could we'll get into that later on.
You could pull
off
the lethal weapon roll very easily.
Right. Yeah. I'm Riggs. I'm crazy.
Well, I mean, you know, I have text messages. I have a lot of text messages where I can prove that you've threatened to kill me and Matt. So, you know.
Yeah. Go and put this gun to my mouth.
So, I mean, if there was a member of the three of us that I could believe that could be Riggs, it's definitely you, Long.
Oh, thank you.
I'm too much more like the old guy.
Yeah, Mark would be the one being, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, I'm like Danny. I'm like Glover, man. I'm too old for this shit. For sure. So, how are you, fellas?
Good.
Grimy.
That's gross. I don't want to hear about your grime.
Yeah. After the winter storm, I had to borrow Matt's main bathroom shower. Mm-hmm. And it's like a weak pressure, dude. It's like one gallon per minute or something. It was like, did I break this thing while showering or something? Because I thought... It was like super. Well, it was like just a trickle, you know.
I mean, to be fair, I haven't showered yet today either, so I'm probably a little grimy, but not maybe as grimy as Matt. But I will.
Yeah, for some reason that bathroom, it just gets like the master bedroom gets all the priority, and that bathroom's like the redheaded stepchild, and you've got to turn the shower head on a high stream setting to get actual, you know, good pressure from it for some reason.
But. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's an older house, and I guess it's some plumbing issue. I don't know.
But I still appreciate you letting me use your shower, Matt.
Anytime, man. Anytime.
Long's coworkers and his appreciate it too, I'm sure, so he didn't smell funky at work.
I appreciated your wife sharing in it with me. I'm joking.
Thanks. She handed me that loofah.
Yeah.
The Asian persuasion.
Right. I'm the lethal weapon, right?
That's right. That's like Briggs, Glover's daughter.
Briggs and Martok.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, while Matt was fixing his car today, how's your guys' week? Just work and shit?
Work and baseball practice and a couple of games. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had company at work a lot this week because, you know, work for a company that always feels they need to come check on things because even if you're making money, you must be doing something wrong. It's like, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they tell you you're going to have these walks and all this shit. And then they don't even come in the back room. So, you know, part of you is like, oh, that's nice. They didn't come bug me. But at the same time, you feel like, well, I did all this shit for nothing. You know, it's like... Motherfuckers. Like, damn. know? But, I don't know.
Corporate walks in on Mark taking a picture of his date. Oh, yeah. It's like, why is your receiver taking pictures of his hands?
Well, we need some context. There needs some context to that story. We're recording on Saturday night instead of our usual Friday, which is to say our usual Friday because it's going to become Saturdays soon anyway. But Long had a friend date Friday night. So we recorded Saturday, so I texted the guys a picture of my hand saying, this is my date. And it's a terrible joke, but you know, it's a teenage joke, but it's funny. You know, guys are always going to think that stuff's funny.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and Long was like, yeah, Corbin's going to like, why are you taking a picture of your hand? It's like, no,
I could probably deal with Anderson.
You know, I could probably think of a reason or something, you know. Yeah. I think it'd be weird. Like sometimes
it's for my doctor.
Well, sometimes I take pictures of stolen Extends tablets or KY Durags. Jelly, and I've Durags. Yeah, I've sent them to group chats with Matt and Frank, and I always blame Frank. I'm like, Frank, why are you stealing the Extends or the lube? So you know, I don't know. Dumb jokes. They never get old.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, boys will be boys. That's all I'm gonna say. I have a friend I play Star Wars Galaxies with, and I speak to her on Discord some, and she's been listening to the show, and she's probably gonna hear this and she's gonna be shocked that I called her out. But she said, "You guys are such pervs." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" She goes, "I listened to y'all's Fifth Element episode, and y'all just want to stop talking about Lilu," and I just laughed. I was like, "Hey, boys will be boys, you know." So, but you know what? I'm proud to be perv. So I'm not gonna.
That's hide right. It. It's know? In our DNA, man.
I'm too old to hide it anymore. Damn it! It's like it is what it is. I don't have to play coy anymore. Stop denying things over there, Long. You know you agree.
Yep.
Well, let's get into today's show. We always start things with download this, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out this week. I didn't really watch much. Now baseball season started, I've been watching the Astros and stuff, but I did get caught up on Falcon Winter Soldier. But we can talk about that in a minute if you guys are caught up on it.
I'm not. I'm actually one episode behind. So
slacker.
I am two episodes
behind.
You're even a bigger slacker.
Because he keeps breaking his car.
Yeah, true. I will just say that it took a bit to pick up, and the new episode this weekend definitely picks it up, and it's probably the best episode of the show. It's really well done.
I really like Zemo. You know,
yeah, they give him more character. You're really gonna I can't think of the actor's name, but the way the guy is playing John Walker really comes into his own in this latest episode, and there's truly a moment that even for Marvel that has me going, wow, they did that. So it's interesting. You'll see whenever y'all watch it. But well done so far. I'm starting to dig it. It's cool stuff.
How many episodes? Six.
It's only six episodes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So only a couple more to go.
So I guess Loki will debut soon.
Yeah, I think it's in May or June.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this year Marvel's stepping up with their series.
I want to say finally. Loki's in June because they have the Bad Batch preparing in May, so they're going to do a Star Wars in May.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about that.
And you'll watch it, it's fucking Star Wars.
No, I won't.
He says that, but he will, folks. And then I think Loki's in June, I believe. So, did you guys check out anything this week?
I'll start off. Basically, because of our feature movie today, which is Lethal Weapon, I got into the Lethal Weapon marathon today by watching the ones that I didn't get to see, Lethal Weapon 2 and Lethal Weapon 3. I have not seen those two. Oh, actually, all three of these movies, only bits and pieces. And out of all three, 2 is my least favorite, and I actually like 3 more. And part 1, we'll get into that, but I like part 1 a lot too. So, but yeah, Lethal Weapon 2, Lethal Weapon 3, 2 kind of meandered a bit, but I don't know, the pacing was kind of off in that one. But 3, yeah, just perfect pacing in my opinion. And I kind of liked it. So, but part 4 is what got me into the Soul series with Jet Li. That was a really good one.
Yeah, so. Part 4 is the only one I saw in theaters.
Yeah.
You know, because it came out in the late 90s and I saw it. And it's funny, when I saw 4, I had seen 1 and 2. And it's funny you like 3 because I had never saw 3 because everybody said it was bad. So I kind of skipped 3. And then I went.
Bad.
And then I,
really?
Yeah, people didn't like 3. Then I went back
and watched. 2 is the one with diplomatic immunity, right?
Yeah.
And then I went back and watched 3, and like, I don't hate it, but like, I kind of find Pesci a little bit annoying in it.
Yeah.
You know, I can see why people, I can see why people didn't like it based on the first 2, because all of a sudden you're trying to overdo, they try to overdo the comedy in 3 by adding, by adding Pesci into it. So I think it took away from some of the serious ramifications that could have occurred in the first 2. So it made 3 seem a little more silly, but then they bring the seriousness back in 4. So I can see from that standpoint why they didn't like it. But I don't hate 3, you know, but I can see their points.
Yeah. Part 2, I don't know. Maybe part 2 and 3 are about the same for me.
Yeah, part 2 is kind of just the storyline's not as interesting.
No.
Yeah. I mean, really, part 2, all you're caring about is Riggs and Murtaugh and their interactions.
Yeah.
I just don't remember 3 and 4. I probably need to rewatch those. I have them. I remember 2. I remember the bad guy had diplomatic immunity. It's like, you cannot prosecute me. I am foreign. Or something like that, you know?
Diplomatic immunity revoked. So,
this feature, getting Mark, into the feature film.
Huh? Well, did you watch?
Oh,
did you watch anything this week, Matt?
Yeah, oh, Matt, crap. Besides breaking your car.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought I already went. I usually go first, you know, and it threw me off.
I jumped
Matt fiddled with the CPU.
Yeah.
With the CPU of his Toyota and broke that.
Yeah.
And then it somehow broke the cooling system, and then it somehow broke the starter.
For real, man. My car, if I haven't mentioned it these past few weeks, my car has been just throwing, you know, issues at me.
Only because you tinkered with it.
Not really. The alternator was the original alternator. It's 20 years old. It's going out. The starter, the plunger got corroded to the starter. I'm not going to tinker with the starter. I didn't even get to the starter till today, so didn't tinker with that. I didn't tinker with my heater core. That was the first thing that went out. First the heater core got blocked. Whenever the heater core clogged, which it's a 20-year-old heater core, they get clogged after a while, and that caused pressure to build up, and my hose just popped off, started spraying coolant everywhere. Had to replace that. Didn't realize that my heater core was clogged.
Yeah. We don't want to know an episode of This Old Car right now. So
yeah, basically led to a lot of other things.
Matt Bila, we get it. We get it.
But
thank you, Matt Bila, for that.
I did watch Striptease with Jackie because she
why?
It doesn't get any better.
Dude, why
she wanted to first I was like, hey, have you ever seen this movie? It's on sale.
It's on Vudu.
And I was like, she's like, no, she's like, really? She sees the cover, of course, right? And I was like, dude, Burt Reynolds is like so horrible in it, but you know,
horrible.
Demi Moore is like smoking, you know, that's like the whole thing basically. She's just smoking hot.
And you awakened something in your wife that she had never realized.
I showed her the trailer, and when she saw Demi Moore like bust open her shirt and start dancing. She was like, holy shit, she looks good. Yeah, go ahead and buy it. And so I was like, okay. Wow. Other than that,
what the audience really wants to know is, did you score because you let her watch that?
yes. The day before, though. Yeah. But
that doesn't count then.
I did buy Hercules in New York, and it's a horrible movie.
Doesn't get any better.
No, it doesn't. That's actually worse. And I was like, Jackie's like, why did you buy this? It's a horrible movie. And I said, I bought this just for the bear fight. That is it. For the dude in the bear costume. And Arnold like starts slapping the bear. And he subdues the bear by like slapping him. And then, of course, the cops are like, oh, my God, Arnold, you know, beat up a bear. And, you know, he's got the horrible accent going on because he barely knew how to speak English at that point.
Well, it's not even his. I don't even think they use his voice in that movie. I think it's all dubbed over.
There's two versions. There's a dub and there's the original. I like the original just because, you know, it's Arnold's first acting gig. You know, it's his first leading role, at least.
Are you talking about Hercules in New York?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I only saw the dubbed version.
Oh yeah, the dubbed is, yeah. Well, it's probably even worse than the original. At least the original has Arnold's real voice.
Yeah.
Sad.
So anyhow.
So nobody really watched anything. Well, Long did. He got caught up on Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got caught up in Lethal Weapon. It was fun.
Cool. Well, I guess that's it then for Download This, since everybody slacked off this week. I've been busy though. But all right, well, let's get into today's featured film then. We go back to 1987, directed by Richard Donner and starring Mel Gibson and Danny Glover and Gary Busey. It is Lethal Weapon, a movie that strangely came very close to starring Bruce Willis, believe it or not. And then Bruce felt that he just wasn't quite. He couldn't do the crazy stuff he felt, so he went on to do Die Hard instead.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. Anybody want to summarize this film?
I did it last week. Matt?
No, I did it last
week. Go ahead.
Matt did it last week.
Oh. Well, you do it then. It's your idea. Oh,
fuck hell. basically, Murtaugh is just turned 50 years old, and he's assigned a new partner in Riggs, who is kind of a suicidal cop. After the death of his wife, he has a death wish and it's going kind of nuts. So the captain believes he would do good to have a partner to watch over him, and assigns him to Murtaugh. And Murtaugh doesn't really want a partner either, so it ends up becoming a match made in heaven, so to speak, because they weren't really made for each other, but it turns out they are made for each other as they chase some drug smugglers that are running drugs in their city. After a series of, or not a series of murder, but after a murder of a prominent, a friend of Murtaugh's calls him because doesn't understand why his daughter would have been murdered. And turns out his daughter had gotten into some bad stuff, hooking and running these drugs. And so they have to go after these guys and solve the case. And it gets personal towards the end of the film as Gary Busey's bad guy and the general, capture Murtaugh's daughter and make it personal, and then go to his home, and they gotta stop the bad guys. And throughout the film, you watch these two guys develop a friendship that becomes quite a close friendship over the next three films after this, as this film spawned a franchise of four movies and even a short-lived TV series that hit Fox a couple years ago. So Lethal Weapon franchise has been around for a long time. Now there's some talks about Mel and Danny coming back for one more to close it out. His legacy sequels are very popular right now, and we'll see if that happens. Danny and Mel both say they want to do it, and Richard Donner seems like he's kind of interested, so we'll see if this occurs. But we're talking about the original today. And so Long, you had never really seen this all the way through till this week?
Right. I've only seen bits and pieces. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Really good character cop interactions, character interactions, really. You understand each of the motivations, Danny Glover being the guardrail, basically, for Mel Gibson. And I think in the middle of the movie, after that suicide jump, was when things started kind of turning around for Riggs' character. Sure. And I really like that scene. It's a really good, not so overly dramatic scene where he stops the bullet. Bartok stops the hammer from hitting the chamber with his bare hands. And then from that point on, really, I mean, freaking Gary Busey's in it too, and he's a stone cold killer. And I like the way this movie was shot, using mostly natural lighting again, almost like a Michael Mann movie, you know?
Yeah.
But not quite with that flair. But and that's what I like about a lot of the Richard Donner movies, is that he focuses on the characters quite a bit. Generally, and this is a really well written movie too by Shane Black. Mm-hmm. In which I noticed in the sequels 2 and 3 doesn't have quite the tight pacing like the first movie did. But I think I really liked the first movie quite a bit. So
yeah.
Yeah. If I were to rank it, I'll rank it towards the end of a talk. But I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. So yeah.
I think you're spot on with your pacing comment. It feels like this movie just moves along really good. I didn't feel like there was a time where there was like some dead space and wasted time. I feel like everything is driving. Every moment is driving something. Every moment has a purpose. Like you said, the suicide jumper part, that was instrumental in showing that, you know, what Briggs was struggling with. And, you know, even the, it was, you know, comedic, the dinner with Glover's family, and the daughter's like oogling Mel Gibson, and he's like, it seems like he's gonna, like, you know, he's kind of like digging it, you know. And I forget how old the daughter is in the movie. I guess she's like of age, I guess. I don't know. But I thought it was hilarious. And then it just...
Well, it allows for the callback joke at the end of the movie, too. Yes, where he tells him, don't you go near my daughter.
But I think, you know, these guys, you know, they bond. And you see that throughout the film. There's just a... You know, an escalating climax with that. You know, alongside the actual action climax of the film, whenever they have to save the daughter, and
this film has kind of a double climax. The scene where they save the daughter, and then Mel gets captured, and then he gets out, and then they have the battle at the house. It's almost like a double triple climax towards the end of the film. I noticed that. I was watching it. I think that helps the pacing too. The last, because at that point you already knew what they were after. They were after Busey's character and the general. And then when he captures a daughter, it makes it personal, and it helps those last part of the film move really quickly. It feels like you're an hour into the film, then all of a sudden it's over, because the last 40 minutes move really quickly because there's so much going on. But it's really well paced. Yeah. You know,
the torture scene was pretty intense.
And that's where your twin appeared. The great henchman Al Leong appears, and
Al Leong, awesome. Yeah, and he has a speaking role too, because he's always been the silent, silent background stunt player.
And then,
he only grunts when he, you know, is in the movie scene. But yeah, he actually has a speaking role.
I know he has a speaking role, and he is electrocuting Riggs, and then all of a sudden, when the action breaks out, it's all of a sudden he gets shot. It's like, oh, there goes Al Leong. He's gone all of a sudden.
Yeah,
gone.
Yeah.
I also like in this film, watching it again, I really like the way Glover plays Murtaugh. He kind of plays him as like an old school way of acting, just very subtle, but delivers his lines with like a father like figure. So he's a perfect complement to Riggs's crazy ass on the edge cop. And I think that helps their bonding throughout the film. This is the way the two characters are played. And credit to Mel too, because he's really good in this movie also. And And
Danny Glover, he's such a versatile actor. Mm-hmm. You come to love him in this movie, but you hate his freaking guts in The Color Purple.
Oh,
yeah. He is like the and then he'll make you laugh out loud in the comedy.
And that's why he got cast in this film, was because of his work in The Color Purple.
Really?
You know, they really liked it. They wanted him for this film. He was their only choice ever for Murtaugh. They went through a few actors for Riggs. The two most prominent were almost Mel Gibson and Bruce Willis. And the funny thing is, Mel was also reading for the part of John McClane and almost took it. But when he took this film, then they ended up kind of switching roles. So interesting how that worked out. They both ended up with franchises based on the roles they took.
Well, this movie came out the same year as Die Hard?
A year before. Yeah, but they were. I guess casting started around the same time because Die Hard was '88, and Gary Busey, he took on the role because he felt it was a good script and he wanted to work with Mel Gibson and Dan Glover, and he credited this movie for revitalizing his movie career because he was not getting a lot of work, and after this he took on a string of playing bad guys in this and Point Break and a couple other films, but he credits this movie for starting his career back up.
I like him in this film.
Oh, he's solid. Yeah. He's not over the top BC. This is just BC doing his thing as a solid bad guy.
He's stone cold killer, man.
Yeah, man. He's very non BC in this film. He's not
he's like
crazy
a proto.
At all.
He's like a proto Ben Foster.
Yeah, for real.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, he is. He's just good Gary BC in this movie, and he plays a good bad guy, and I love the fight at the end between him and Mel. And they made that scene like Gibson's character Riggs also knows like martial arts, and they kind of keep it quiet the whole film, and they didn't make a big deal about it in the script on purpose because they felt like they wanted to be natural that you believe this guy would know a form of martial arts, and Riggs uses it to fight BC's character at the end of the film. I thought that was kind of cool touch, you know, that because doesn't he reveals that he was a soldier too as well, right?
Yeah.
He reveals it to him when he's leaving the dinner. Well, Murtaugh was a soldier, and Mel kind of reveals to him too that I was there also. You know, I fought as well. You know, so I think that helped them gain respect for each other. You know, so yeah. Well, no, Mel couldn't have been in Vietnam, but I think he served. He just made a point that he served or something as well. They never really clarify where they fought at, but yeah.
For some reason, I thought he served there. I don't know why.
Because he would have been too young.
Yeah.
Based on the character's age of the movie, you know. So, yeah. Because, probably so. Doesn't matter. But I also like the fact that I like the jazzy score of this movie. It's scored by Michael Kamen, and they brought in Eric Clapton, too, for the guitar work, which I thought was kind of an interesting choice. And so it gives you kind of an old 70s cop movie type feel with the jazz score and stuff like that, kind of guitars in the background.
Yeah. The first movie, it was cool. But when I keep hearing the same style in the second or third movie, I got tired of it.
Oh, did it?
Nah.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, all right, the saxophone is getting really cheesy now in the parts 2 and 3, you know? So I was... The first movie, it's fine. It's great because it gives it that unique identity as a movie. But for me, I mean, I'm an audiophile too, so music plays a big role. And you hear me shitting on, you know, the score for Godzilla vs. Kong. You know, there's no hummable theme in it.
Yeah,
you know, and this one, it's kind of like more like atmospheric. There's no one standout melody, but still, I mean, it's a unique sound for the movie.
Yeah.
At least it's not freaking, I don't know, Inception-style bass drum droning, you know, like you hear in a lot of movies nowadays. So, but, yeah, that car chase scene at the end, I could kind of see why it was lampooned and Loaded Weapon. Dude's on his foot, and the guy's in the car, 10-minute chasing, you know? He's like, he's got to be gone by now. So, but, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, that
was give funny. Mel second place for running after, or for running scenes after Tom Cruise.
This is also the first movie to use a modern cell phone. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
I thought that was kind of cool. And, the scene at the beginning of the film where the girl falls, she actually did her own stunt for that. They used a giant balloon that with the street was painted over on top of it so that they could make it look as real as possible. She jumped down the balloon and they were able to cut the shot away just in time before, you know, the balloon burst in and you see that was a painted balloon. So I thought that was kind of cool. You know, some unique special effect work in this film. And she actually did the jump herself. And Mel Gibson turned down being in The Untouchables and The Fly to do this. So that was, you know, because he wanted to, I guess, to do this. So I'm surprised he turned down The Untouchables. I wonder what he would have played in that.
That was quite funny.
Big movie.
Another tie to Die Hard, the 92 Beretta that's used as a prop in this film was also used in Die Hard, but then retired. So that prop was only used in these two films.
Leonard Nimoy almost directed this, but he turned it down at almost the last minute because he just felt he couldn't do an action film. Even though he had done a Star Trek film at this point, he just felt like action was not his forte. And he went on to direct Three Men and a Baby.
Three Men and a Little Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was another interesting note. Anthony Kiedis' father appears in this film. And he plays a drug dealer at the Christmas tree lot at the beginning of the film. Anthony Kiedis' dad is in this movie. And just it's interesting because Kiedis would go on to appear in Point Break with Gary Busey, who's in this movie. So, see how it's all connected? 6 degrees of Anthony Kiedis. and for Shane Black, this is one, you know, he had done the Monster Squad at this point and a couple of smaller scripts, but this was like his first huge script that really broke him out. You know, after this, he became a very hot script writer after this film and a script doctor and things like that. And so this was Shane Black's breakout movie too for him as a writer. And you know, and he likes to, it continues his trend of his movies taking place around Christmas time. Iron Man 3 and I think even what the Predator movie even took place at Christmas, if I remember right. So yeah, Shane Black likes his movies to take place at Christmas. And of course this movie has been brought up.
If
Die Hard is a Christmas movie,
there was a Christmas setting.
People think this is too, and no, it just takes place at Christmas. It's not a Christmas movie. It's just a Christmas setting. So don't even, Matt. I can see your ears turning. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie, and neither is Lethal Weapon.
Oh, I'm not trying to convince you. Okay, you know.
There's no convincing.
But what you call it? Ali Yong, man. He also starred in Die Hard. Did we mention that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Lethal Weapon and Die Hard. That's crazy. So the prop, the actors, Al Leong.
And he was in Big Trouble Little China. Al Leong was
Trouble
the man.
Little China. Man, dude. And he was in Double Dragon.
And nobody watched that shit, though.
No, they didn't.
Did he have a speaking role?
I think he just fought.
Yeah. Well, that's grunted.
Or grunted. Or grunted and while fighting.
So, Long, you were saying that you had a ranking for the Lethal Weapon films. What do you rank them?
Let's see. I would definitely rank them as follows. Like, and these are all good movies. And I would probably have to rank Lethal Weapon 3 as last. But I still enjoyed the hell of it. I still enjoyed it more than part two, but I still rank it last because I just literally finished watching it just an hour ago, my whole marathon. So it's still sinking in. But right now, first impressions, Lethal Weapon 3 is last, then Lethal Weapon 2, and then Lethal Weapon, the first one, and then my personal favorite is part 4. So.
4 is good. Al Leong is in 4 also.
Was he?
Yeah, he plays a triad member. I also didn't know he was in the 88 or 98 Godzilla movie. He's actually in that.
Was he?
He's a Japanese fishing crewman, uncredited.
So. Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Did not know.
Yeah. He was in Escape from LA, uncredited. So he's done a lot of uncredited work, too. So interesting.
Yeah.
The Shadow, Beverly Hills Cop 3. He was in The Last Action Hero. I should know that. The Uncredible. So anyway. But Lethal Weapon, man, I give this movie a solid A. It's a good buddy cop movie. One of the best out there.
I'll give it a... I'll definitely give it like a A minus.
Yeah, I think A minus is fair. Maybe even B plus. I definitely don't agree with IMDb. IMDb has it as a C plus.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the problem with IMDb though is that that's not actually their rankings. That's user rankings. That's why I never pay attention to theirs.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I give it a 7.6 out of 10. According to their user rankings, I'd say that's probably, you know, that's probably a solid B plus to an A. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's a good film, man. And I like it. I like the whole series of Lethal Weapon films quite a bit. I'm with Long. I think 4 is the best, and I like 1. The 2 or 3 are kind of crapshoots. But I would definitely watch another one if they brought this back. I think the time is right. You could do a fun buddy cop movie with these guys again and bring it back. I'd like to see maybe one more, you know, see where these guys are, you know, years later. Because, shoot, and it literally would be, I mean, the last one was in 98. So if they do one now, it is 22, 23 years later. You know, Glover's got to be getting up there in age by now. If he was 50 in this movie, you know, for age-wise, even though he was actually he was only 40 when they actually filmed it. So if he was 40 in 87, you know, that was 30 years ago. So, yeah, Glover's got to be in the 70s by now. So one more maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he hasn't been acting much lately.
Not as much. Know? He's appeared in a few things, a few independent releases and stuff, but not as much, you know, as he gets a bit older. So, but I guess that brings us to this week's top five then. And let's see. I was just curious when you said, yeah, he's done some TV work and things like that, a few independent films. He actually appeared in the last Jumanji movie. Danny Glover did.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, yeah, that's right.
And some direct-to-DVD stuff.
Yeah. The Next Level.
So, yeah, he's done some stuff. So, this week's top five. This probably seems obvious since we just did a buddy cop film, so we figured we would talk our five favorite buddy cop films. And who wants to start?
I'll start.
Boys. Go upstairs.
Let's see. It's kind of a weird pick, but I remember watching this as a kid and enjoying it. But my number five is, I think it was a TV movie. I'm not sure. It's called The Private Eyes, starring Don Knotts and Tim Conway. Don Knotts. N-O-T-T.
Yeah. The Ghost and Mr. Chicken.
Oh, yeah, and that one, too.
Yep.
but Tim Conway wasn't in that one.
Oh, no.
But I don't even remember the plot. I just remember I always watched it because, I don't know, as a kid, I enjoyed it. Probably not funny today, but, yeah, that's my number five. Nice. The Private Eyes.
I'll go next so Mark can have the last say. I've got 22 Jump Street as number five. I think it's hilarious.
Oh, okay.
That's
a sequel, right?
That's the sequel. You know, you have Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill pretending to be Mexican, and then they're like, "Why isn't he talking?" And he's like, "My name is Jeff." Like that's supposed to be Hispanic or something.
Yeah.
And then you know, the bad guys are like, you know, they start talking in their regular voices, and they're like, "Oh, how convenient, their accents are gone."
Right.
But yeah. 22 Jump Street.
At number five, I have Die Hard, which isn't a typical buddy cop movie, but John's talking to
Carl.
Carl, that's right. The whole time, and they're helping each other get through this event at Nakatomi Plaza. And so, you know, it's it might be, in some ways, Die Hard is probably a better movie than the five movies I have on my list, but it's not a better buddy cop movie than the five movies I have on my list, but it still deserves to be on the list.
Well, Carl from Family Matters.
Yeah. I can't think of his name in the movie. God dang. Al, right? Yeah, it's Al the movie.
Al. Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. I was introduced to that actor from Family Matters
first.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I saw him in Die Hard a couple years later, I'm like, whoa, is that Carl from Family Matters? Yes, it is.
Yeah, Sergeant Al. Sergeant Powell. Yeah. That's
right. Yeah. And, I was really taken aback by the chemistry between the two, even though they weren't really on screen together all that much.
Yep. You know, he made a cameo in together. Two. Makes a cameo in Die Hard 2.
Yeah. Yeah. My number four, Matt, you'll get a kick out of this. There goes Mark. He's going to go spank his kids now.
There you go. Get him.
Get him. Get him, Dad. No, I'm joking. My number four is Loaded Weapon.
There we go.
Emilio Estevez and Samuel Jackson. And I don't know. I mean, there's hardly any chemistry between the two, but they did their best. And I don't know. I like the comedy riff between the two cops. So Loaded Weapon.
It's definitely funny, man. I know you bought me that movie and I watched it, and I found it funny.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like so many scenes from Lethal Weapon that were spoofed in this Loaded. Yeah. The funniest scene for me that had me laughing was they commandeered the bikes from the kids.
Oh, yes.
And the bikes exploded for no reason whatsoever. So, anyways. And then John Lovett's character was definitely a riff on Joe Pesci's character. You know, and there was a boat scene and Emilio Estevez is trying to, you know, defuse the bomb. It's like, okay, this is one's for you with your name on it. You know, and then exploded the character, John Lovett's character off the boat. So anyways, number four, Loaded Weapon.
Number four for me, I've got Training Day. Denzel, Ethan Hawke.
I don't know, is that really a buddy cop movie?
It seemed like they were buddy cops until the end, and then he screws them over.
It's so overrated.
I like it.
Well, it didn't. I mean, I like it too. I mean, just for Eva Mendez, but you know.
Yeah, Eva Mendez. Yeah, man.
Wow.
Yeah. That's it, I don't know if I'd call that a buddy cop movie, though.
I don't know. You know.
They're more like a mentor understudy.
But the thing is, they're never friends throughout the movie. See, when I think of buddy cop, I think like they become friends throughout the movie. This movie, they're never friends even when he turns on him. They were never friends even before that. It was simply somebody he put a little trust into as he was training him, you know? Does that make sense? I mean, because they're never really friends ever in the film, you know?
I guess.
That's perhaps. A bit of a stretch. At number four, I have Men in Black. I'm going Space Cops.
That's a good one, actually.
You know, with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, man, and they're so much fun to watch in those movies. You know, I enjoyed all three of them, man. You know, even the third one wasn't as well received, but I think all three were good movies.
I've never seen the third.
They're fun to watch. The original is obviously the best. So, yeah, good chemistry between those two guys in that movie.
Definitely.
Long, your number three.
My number three, saw this movie quite a bit when I was a kid as well. I don't remember the plot, but I do remember that it's an awesome movie. Tango and Cash, starring Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell. Yep. Two of the coolest dudes in Hollywood. And as a kid, I enjoyed the movie. I do remember there was a prison scene where the two of them are in prison and they're trying to outwit their way out of the situation and escape it.
I always remember when they dress up as girls too. It's always hilarious.
Yeah. Good chemistry between the two actors. And Wasn't Sylvester Stallone's character more by the book than Kurt Russell's?
Yeah,
character?
I remember right. Russell was a little bit off the mark a bit.
More of the loose cannon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of the two. But yeah, Tango and Cash.
Nice. For me, number three, I've got Beverly Hills Cop. Banana the tailpipe, you know. And then the man, that scene where he's trying to get into the fancy restaurant so he can talk with an informant or person that might be able to lead him to a suspect. And he's talking about the waiter won't let him in, but he's like, well, if you can tell so and so, you know, that I tested positive for AIDS and he needs to test himself, and he pretends that he's flamboyant, so that the waiter will just let him go in and speak his piece. That was fun. I think Eddie Murphy is just, you know, off the wall awesome in that film. Just his acting, his comedy. It's great. And then his partner, of course, appeared at Comic Palooza a few years ago. More the straight guy, by the book dude. Yeah. Beverly Hills Cop.
Anyway. Who was he buddy with in that one again?
Wasn't Judge Reinhold or something?
Judge Reinhold, yeah. Yeah.
See, I don't retain those movies. I don't remember. I think, you know, I don't know. I've seen them like once and I was like, eh.
Okay. I still like the first movie.
Yeah, the first one's the
best. I barely remember. Yeah, I know the sequels weren't very well received. But at number three, we're number three, right? Yeah, I'm sticking with Will Smith, only this time it's Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, and that's Bad Boys, you know. You know, we did a Michael Bay film a couple weeks ago. We did The Rock, and The Bad Boys is arguably his other really good movie that he made. You know, it still holds up well. Those two guys have a ton of chemistry on screen. That they, even the second one's enjoyable. And I still haven't watched the third one. I want to. I actually have a copy of it on Vudu because I got a free copy of it, and I just haven't watched it yet. But eventually I will. But Bad Boys at number three for me, man. Those guys. A lot of fun to watch Martin Lawrence and Will Smith in those movies.
Yeah, my number two buddy cop movie is Lethal Weapon 4. It was the first Lethal Weapon movie I ever watched. I really enjoyed the chemistry between Glover and Mel Gibson, and just seeing them just getting the tar beaten out by freaking Jet Li, you know. I was like, they had their hands full trying to take him down, and it's definitely one of the best fight scenes I've ever seen. And that's the thing about the Lethal Weapon movies, that they always have some really interesting fight scenes at the end of the movie. First one, you know, the whole fight under the fire hydrant thing between Riggs and Gary Busey, and then the knife fight. Well, not knife fight, but the knife stuck in his leg thing in part two. Mm-hmm. And then I also like the climax of part three where Gibson's character burned up the whole building complex, a whole subdivision, just to get to one guy, you know. And it's not as exciting as the first two movies, but man, part four had the best ending fight out of all of them.
That was supposed to be that was kind of Jet Li's big breakout role for American audiences, and you know, he went on to have some moderate success in the U.S. And now it's it's a shame. You know, he's been real ill and not doing well. It's a shame. You know, he's had some dementia issues and other things, and sad to see. So.
Yeah.
Number two for me is Lethal Weapon, film we just reviewed today. I think it's a great film. Obviously, I mean, we just talked about it. I think it deserves number two or more. So, Lethal Weapon, number two.
And number two, I have the second movie in this series to put on the list, and that's Die Hard with a Vengeance. Maybe Samuel L. Jackson's cop isn't a cop in the movie, but he plays like he's a cop because he helps John McClane throughout the city. And man, it's those two just together are so good in that movie. Die Hard with a Vengeance might be my favorite Die Hard film just because of those two guys in that movie. And I really like Jeremy Irons, bad guy in the film. And it ties back to the first one being Hans's brother. But just watching Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis go at it with each other in that movie back and forth and getting a mutual respect for each other by the end of the film is really well done.
Yeah. There was a moment in that movie. I don't know. I tried watching that through and through. For some reason, I just didn't click with Die Hard with a Vengeance, you know? I still like the first... I think first movie is still my personal favorite. Yeah, I'll have to try to rewatch part three again.
Yeah.
You know, as... I don't know. So that's your number two. My number one is actually Rush Hour, starring Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker.
I knew you were going to pick that.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't put it on the list.
it's a good movie overall. And I actually like part two as well. That's a really good one. And Don Cheadle in part two was hilarious. He also... He knows Chinese, and he's speaking fluent Chinese with Jackie Chan and stuff. So, Rush Hour, great action scenes in that movie, and very good chemistry between Tucker and Jackie Chan. So,
yep. Too bad they were also directed by a creep.
Yeah.
Long.
No,
I'm gonna have to copy you. Rush Hour. Yeah. That's who I had to. I loved those movies. One and two are awesome. Both of them are very good. You could probably put Rush Hour 2 up here, I think. But Rush Hour 1, like you said, the chemistry between Jackie and Chris Tucker and Jackie, liking stuff like the Beach Boys and always wanting to listen to them. But he actually really liked the Beach Boys. That was, something he actually really enjoyed. But man.
Who, Chris?
Jackie Chan. He always listened to the Beach Boys. Yeah. Tucker, his bit was always the Michael Jackson stuff. When he did the Michael Jackson karaoke.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That scene when Chris Tucker's being in his fight scene with Zhang Ziyi. The Asian mobster girl. He's like, "Girl, you're so pretty, but you're crazy." Why have to be so pretty, but you're so crazy too?
Crazy that Brett Ratner got the X-Men Last Stand directing gig based on those films, and then of course the Last Stand almost ruined the X-Men franchise because it just wasn't very good. But yet he made two pretty decent buddy cop movies. But of course, he blamed 20th Century Fox on his X-Men problems. But who knows,
Who knows?
And number one, I have the Lethal Weapon series of films. I think that it's the perfect franchise for buddy cops, and I think one and four are the best of the four. But I think they set the standard for what buddy cop films should be over the years. And, I've heard good things about The Nice Guys, which is also a Shane Black film, but I haven't actually watched that yet with Russell Crowe. And, is that Ryan Gosling in it with him? Yeah, I think so.
The Nice Guys?
I've heard that's really good. A really good buddy cop.
Oh, I saw that movie. I saw that movie. It's worth it.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it, Mark.
But I think Lethal Weapons, the series, sets the standard for buddy cop films. So I have the series as my number one on my list. So cool. Good top fives. So let's do some news before we preview next week's film. Lots of movie shifting dates again from Paramount Pictures this time. And they're the ones who announced that their movies are going to come to their streaming service 45 days after. But Mission Impossible 7 got pushed back till May of next year. They pushed Top Gun back 4 more months, so it's not going to be out until November next year. They pushed Ghostbusters back from... Sony pushed Ghostbusters back, I think, from summer to November now. So lots of movie shifting continues. Despite Godzilla vs. Kong giving a spark to the box office, it seems that studios are still a little leery, as they want those theaters a little more full. But it does look like returns are on the horizon. Maybe it'll be Black Widow in July as things return, and people start going to theaters again, and hopefully by the fall we'll be able to enjoy Ghostbusters and Top Gun and Venom 2 and all these movies that are coming out. So, yeah, the COVID pandemic continues to wreak havoc with movie releases, but at least it looks like there's some things on the horizon. And with that said, Sony inked a deal with Netflix to start putting next year. Their movies are going to be exclusive to Netflix after they run in theaters. Same thing. They're doing similar thing to Paramount. 45 days after they run in theaters, they will go to Netflix. So that'll affect any, including any Marvel films, like anything that if they do another Spider-Man film after this third one, it'll go to Netflix. So it doesn't affect any of their movies that come out this year. So interesting is all these studios make their moves to get their movies out there to people in this pandemic world that we're in. So we'll see what happens. And we got trailers this week. Batman: The Long Halloween, the next DC animated film that's coming out in June. It's a two-parter based on the super popular graphic novel about a killer named Holiday. That is killing people on holidays as Batman tries to figure out what's going on. This graphic novel is very well received, very popular. So hopefully DC does a good job with the animated version. The trailer looks really cool. I'm not so sure about this new animated style they're using. Did y'all watch the trailer? It's like it's almost like, I don't know, something's different about the animation compared to what they've been using the last several years.
It's a different style.
Yeah.
For sure. It kind of reminds me of, what was that? The Batman series? The
Telltale Games?
No.
The one where they used Joe TV DiMaggio. Show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they used Joe DiMaggio as the Joker
again? Yeah.
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 A highly stylized,
yeah. It looks, character but I'm design. I'm excited about it, though. You know, I'm definitely going to watch it. I watch almost all. I never miss a DC animated film.
Related news, the voice actress who played Catwoman in The Long Halloween has passed away.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, she recorded all.
Yeah.
Apparently she recorded everything, though, before, you know. But yeah, I saw that.
And, yeah.
Wow.
Bittersweet.
Yeah. And then we got a trailer for Loki. For Marvel Studios, that comes out, I believe, in June, and it looks like a lot of fun, man. You know, one thing, man, Tom Hiddleston's just so good in that character, and it looks like this series. It's interesting seeing Owen Wilson in the Marvel Universe. That's kind of bizarre. I guess they're going to introduce the Time Ordinance Committee or whatever they call it from the Marvel comics, where they keep track of who's messing with time travel and things like that, and. So that looks like it's gonna be a bit of fun. A lot of rumors that we might get a lot of Marvel cameos in this show, as obviously we know Loki can disguise himself and things like that. So we'll see what happens. Someone says at the end of the trailer that's supposed to be Black Widow standing there. You know, I don't know. We'll see. So, because there's been a lot of rumor that, you know, she's got this movie coming out, which we know is a prequel, but there's a lot of rumor coming out that Loki changes the timeline and is going to bring Black Widow back. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
You're never dead in comics. That's just true. And then, I got to talk about this. Not really so much news, but you know, Hasbro Pulse did their big thing on Friday. man, dude, this Optimus Prime toy they're coming out with, which you can order right now at HasbroPulse.com for just $700.
Wow.
You know, I'm not impressed very often with things nowadays, as none of us are. You know, we live in a society where it's hard to be impressed anymore, and that's just true. But wow, this thing is impressive. This Optimus Prime, it breathes. It 25 voice commands. It does poses.
Yeah. It breathes.
Yes, it is the coolest fucking toy I've ever seen. There's a really cool video with Jason Mewes and Kevin Smith on their Instagram page and all of his social media that you can watch, where Hasbro allowed them to introduce the toy and Kevin and Jason have some fun with it. And so it's worth the 4 or 5 minutes of your time to watch this toy. It is that freaking cool. And I know Long's a big Transform fan. I mean, all of us love the Transformers. And man, if I had an extra $700, yeah, why would you not own this? Unfortunately, I don't have an extra $700 lying around. But you know, yeah, for those that can afford it, this is would be a must-have toy.
Well, let's just hope that Uncle Joe will give us a 4th stimulus check.
Right.
Man, me and Mark are about to get recurring ones starting in July.
Yeah, but I still couldn't drop $700 on a toy. Yeah, it's just too much.
Yeah,
I mean, it's cool, but I just can't do it. If I'm dropping $700 on something, it better be like vintage Star Wars that's worth that much, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But it is cool. So I had to talk about that. So that's it I got for the news, though, for this week. So let's preview next week's film as Cops and Mobsters Month continues for April. A couple more films to go. And next week, we're going to talk a movie that we mentioned The Nice Guys a few minutes ago. This movie has Russell Crowe in it, too, and quite a cast in this movie. Guy Pearce is in this film. There's so many actors in the movie. Kim Basinger is in this film. And that is L.A. Confidential.
They were three cops who had nothing in common.
Freeze. Big B, what are you doing here?
Hey, you know, man, keeping the streets safe, boys.
One would do anything to get ahead.
You're truly prepared to be despised within the department?
Yes, sir, I am.
One had his own brand of justice.
How's it going to look in your report?
It'll look like justice. That's what the man got.
And one loved the spotlight.
What exactly do you do on the show, Jack?
I teach Brett Chase how to walk and talk like a cop.
The Night Owl Massacre. This is a heinous crime that requires swift resolution. 6 victims. One of them, one of our own. Interrogations will be led by Lieutenant Edmund Exley.
I need some backup. Come on.
All right, college boy, I'll help.
Now, all of them are faced with solving one case.
Don't move.
I want confessions, Edmund.
Oh, I'll break them, sir.
These people are all in the morgue.
And someone has to pay for it.
There's something wrong with the Night Owl. I just can't prove it.
They thought they had it all figured out.
Anything bothering you about the Night Owl case?
The fact that you guys won't let it get filed away.
I didn't kill nobody!
But what started as a murder...
You talk only to me on this one.
...became a mystery that could cost them everything.
Why was Susan Leffert at the Night Owl?
I don't know. I never heard of the Night Owl till today.
How about some payback, big time?
We need evidence.
I'll get the evidence.
It was an information exchange.
Do you have any proof?
The proof had his throat slit.
What do you want, Exley?
I just want to solve this thing.
Even if it means paying the consequences?
Kevin Spacey, Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, James Cromwell, Kim Basinger, Danny DeVito. L.A. Confidential.
And you need one of you guys have ever seen this film, which is amazing. I figured at least one of y'all would see it. But y'all are going to enjoy this movie. It's... as much as I like The Departed, L.A. Confidential might be the best of these four movies we're doing. It really might be. It's that good of a film. And I don't want to hype it up too much. Then Long gets on here next week and says, man, Mark, you suck. You don't know what you're talking about.
You overhyped it. You oversold it.
But, you know, so it should be a good film. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. I bought it a while back when it was $5 on Vudu. So, you know, I'm sure you can rent it or something. But that's next week's show as Cops and Mobsters continues. For the month of April as we talk L.A. Confidential. And that's all we got for tonight, man. Thank you always for listening. This is the RebelRadioPodcast.com is our website. You can find everything. And all the support you guys give us as we move into the summer. We've got some good films coming up planned. We are just looking at the list of what we got coming. And so we lead into summertime and eventually Halloween Horrors Month where we get to poo-poo our pants a little bit watching horror films. And as the year rolls on, almost to 250 episodes. And next year, sometime we'll reach 300. And after that, I'm not gonna, I don't know. Maybe
we have to watch 300.
Maybe we'll retire. We already did 300.
We'll have to watch it for the 300th episode. No, I'm joking.
So that's all coming soon. But this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Lethal Weapon.
You're damn right. Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
And do it.
Do it.